All right, friends, we're going to pull the meeting to order at 6 o'clock, Wednesday, March 22nd. We do have a quorum, and we thank everybody for coming to an evening meeting. And Representative Petersburg, would you like to move the minutes from the March 21st meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the minutes of the March 21st meeting.
Thank you very much, sir. Any discussion on those minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion passes. All right, now we're going to do House File 2618. Does someone come here? There he is, 2618. You're just in time. That was perfect. Good, so we are going to pull up Representative Hussein's bill, House File 2618, to be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. And I move it 2618 before the committee. So, Representative Hussein, will you please present your bill.
Thank you, Representative Chair Tapke, and good evening, Chair, committee members. Thank you for hearing House File 2618, a bill that would appropriate $25 million for the City of St. Paul and Ramsey County to redesign partial Wright Street and connect the street to the state capitol. This redesign, it will build and help around the state capitol. I also wanted to emphasize that the condition of streets throughout the entire city of St. Paul, not just the Wright Street, that is funding. It's not replacement for the city, but it will bring improvement from the state capitol and surrounding. For many of us, we came here for our work, and we want to make sure that we improve the state capitol and surrounding, and this will help also the reinstruction the state capitol that we're working on it, and to improve the surrounding the state capitol. And if you would allow me, I would like to yell for my testifier so they can explain a little bit better than I can do.
You did a great job. Thank you so much. First testifier is Merrick Clapp Smith, Executive Secretary of the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. And if you, we've got a lot of bills on the agenda tonight, so if you could keep it around 2 minutes, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Please say your name and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Merrick Clapp Smith, pleased to be here. I'm speaking on this item today because Rice Street is the spine of the 60 block Capital Area shown on this map with a dashed line. The CAP Board oversees planning, land uses, and design of public and private spaces and projects in the entire 60-block Capital Area. Minnesota Rules Chapter 2400, Zoning and Design for the Capital Area, replaces the city's zoning jurisdiction within our 60 blocks. In addition to zoning, we have a newly updated comprehensive plan for the area. Under this bill, $25 million would be set aside for grants to the city or county for the planning, design, and reconstruction of Lower Rice Street in the Capital Area. This state investment couldn't come at a better time. There are many important needs and activities happening along Rice Street in the near future, and the success of all of them hinges on compatible design of Rice Street. Rice Street today is overbuilt and unattractive. It isn't a place that people want to walk. It's scary to cross, and there is no Main Street character that attracts people to stroll and shop at the area businesses. Also, the Sears site is currently for sale, and when future site users consider the quality and feel of the area today, Rice Street is a negative and not a positive. To improve the site's development potential, we want new design plans and a construction timeline in hand for Lower Rice Street. This investment would implement a vision for Lower Rice Street that was developed in partnership between the community, county, the city, and the CAP Board between 2017 and 2019. The community was engaged in a variety of ways to ensure that its input would guide the future street design. Several designs were explored during community planning, and then guidelines for intersections and street design were adopted that respect both city and county standards. The conversations between the community, CAP board, the city, and county resulted in the vision for a restored Lower Rice Street, designed as a multimodal Main Street linking downtown St. Paul, the Capitol campus, and neighborhoods to the north and west. The vision is a core element of the comprehensive plan for the Capitol area, and its near-term implementation sets the stage for the community-based economic development that is so vitally needed here. This investment by the state will complement Ramsey County's reconstruction of Rice Street to the north and the city's ongoing investments to improve city streets all around us. People who live, work, and visit the area are ready for a redesigned Rice Street. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And while we have Ms. Merrick Clapp Smith up here, are there any questions for her in the presentation at all?
We have more testifiers from the county and the city.
Exactly. I was just going to ask while there was the presentation. So
thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your
time.
You. Next is Mr. Isaacson from Ramsey County. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Isaacson, Public Works Director, Ramsey County. I'd echo a lot of the comments that Merritt just made. Rice Street's a very important corridor to the county. We've spent a lot of time and energy working with the community. I think it's a great example of the type of work that we're trying to do at the county when it comes to public works. It's a corridor that exhibits a lot of the issues that we have relative to safety and the type of progress that we need to make in making a corridor that is fit for folks of all abilities in our community. I think the importance of the discussion here today and looking for additional funding that would support the work at this location is that as we look at our transportation improvement program, which is a five-year plan of our capital investments, there are several segments to the north, as Merritt referenced. This segment isn't in our program currently. And as you think about other things that are coming in terms of regional investments like the G line, which goes from Little Canada Road all the way down to Mendota Heights Road in Dakota County, you'll see that G line incorporates a number of agencies and work in different time frames. And this type of funding would be the kind of thing that would help smooth that construction, reduce construction impacts, and make for a better implementation of all of the various investments that you have planned over the course of about 4 or 5 years. You could probably compress that time frame as well.
Got it. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Sean Kershaw from the City of St. Paul. Thank you for being here. Please say your name for the record. Always good to see you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Sean Kershaw. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of St. Paul. I'm happy to be any place where the primary conversation is not potholes, but it wasn't lost on me that driving up here today, you know, I passed the potholes along Rice Street, where we have cones up. Potholes everywhere, the worst they've been in a generation, because the weather we've had over the last 4 months has been a perfect recipe for producing potholes. But it takes a long time to grow a pothole, if you want to think about it that way. In St. Paul, we're working to make up for lost time for a generation of insufficient funding for our main streets, our collectors, and arterials. This is why the mayor and the city council proposed a local option sales tax last December to provide a sustainable funding source to address these streets throughout St. Paul, as a representative said, for the next 20 years. Not only would we address some of the worst segments you've all encountered driving around St. Paul, when you reconstruct a road, you can make significant improvements to address safety, sustainability, equity, and economic development opportunities, which Merritt talked about in her presentation. Reconstructing roads not only fixes the pothole nightmare, it creates the infrastructure we need for the next generations. We would welcome the opportunity to improve Rice Street that's proposed in this bill. In conjunction with the local option sales tax, the connections around the Capitol and throughout St. Paul would be significantly improved. These opportunities, together with what the county's proposed, with what the CAP board is proposing and our local option sales tax, with Rice Street redone, would be transformational for the Capitol and for the City of St. Paul. thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kershaw. Appreciate it. Discussion on the bill. Thoughts? Representative West.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe you covered this, but I didn't hear it. Is there a reason you're going for a general fund appropriation instead of bonding for this particular project?
Representative Hussein? Would you like that, or?
Yes, I can try to answer that. This will be part of the package that we're trying to redevelop the state capital. So it will be part of it. The state is getting building new building right next to the state capital. So we're trying to improve around the state capital as well. And we're not going through the county or the city, do not have a money, but we want to improve the streets that right next to our state capital.
Representative West.
I understand that. To me, it seems like this is more of a bonding project that'd be put in a bonding bill. So my question is about the source of the funds. Is there a particular reason you're doing one or the other, or is this just you decided on general fund?
Is this a question for the capital area architecture problem?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, Ms. Clapp-Smith.
Thank you. I'm very new to this, so I technically don't know what the difference is, but what I do know is this Rice Street is one of a number of different bills being considered right now for the Capital Rice District. So we have a big investment potentially moving forward with the state office building addition. And so there's a lot of conversation about the health and vigor of the area more generally that's adjacent to that. And so improvement of Rice Street, some other initiatives you'll hear about in House File 2427 are sort of all part of that idea of really bringing vitality to this area. So I think it may be that they're coinciding with each other, but again, I don't know technical answers about funding streams.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Murphy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, it talks about a multimodal transit station. I mean, why would you require that in this bill?
Ms. Clapp-Smith.
There, in the conversations that have happened over the past number of years, there was already agreement between different entities that there should be a what's called a mobility hub, which is essentially a multimodal station that has facilities for pedestrian, bicyclist, transit riders, and makes the connections between those different modes more convenient and seamless for people. And so that was already in our comprehensive plan for the capital area. And in this area specifically. So it's acknowledged within this Rice Street redesign bill.
Representative Murphy.
So some of the dollars then are part of that construction as well.
Ms. Clapp-Smith. Or Representative, I'm sorry, I was talking to Frank, so I didn't hear the question.
Oh. Just wondering if the cost would be part of this then. Is that already included in here, or is that part of the capital or the SOB construction that's going on?
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Clapp-Smith.
Right. I can't say precisely what sources are going to go where. You know, if you think about all the investments we're talking about in this area, it's going to be a partnership not just of the state, but of city, county, metro transit. And so actually moving forward, the mobility hub, which is right around the state office building, I'm not sure which funding that would come from, but Representative Hussein might have more information.
Representative Hussein.
It will be included, the SOP and the surrounding area to develop, you know, if it's a small park or, you know, like need to be redeveloped the area for walking, side works. We're trying to redevelop the whole state surrounding and the Rice Street.
Representative Murphy.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Hussein, closing comments.
Thank you for having me. And many of my colleagues have been complaining about the potholes, but I bring the problem solving right now, so I hope you can support this bill. We're trying to improve the city of St. Paul and the surrounding area the State Capitol complex, so we can have a place of representatives that, you know, place that looks good and attractive and redesign. And I'm very excited about this bill, and I hope you can support me on this one, and let's stop complaining to each other so we can solve this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. With that, we renew the motion that House File 2618 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. All right, so we're going to switch here.
Chairs. All right, our next bill is House File 2604, Representative Jordan. And welcome back to the Transportation Committee. And I will move that House File 2604 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. And I move that House File 2604 be before the committee. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to get situated here. I'm much shorter than Representative Hussein, so bear with me. And good evening. As many of you know, actually we have a lot of new faces. Many of you might not know this, but I proudly represent many transit users. And part of that pride comes from being a transit user myself. I often rely on the bus. Yes, bus, I don't have light rail in my district. So I rely on the 10 mostly, or the 4, my 2 favorite bus routes, to get to work. Then I do use the train. Errands, shopping, and dining. We all agree that transit is a vital system. And it should be improved, and it can be improved. This is fundamentally a take care of what we have bill. And that's because the legislature has failed to take care of our existing transit system, which has left our users in the ditch. And that is the idea that inspired House File 2604. And so to briefly recap the bill, House File 2604 recognizes that even in times when Metro Transit has service issues, our local bus system can run better. If local buses can operate more efficiently, the pain of decreased services that we've seen could be blunted by improved speed and reliability. The working group that is created in this bill would help achieve that by bringing together the partners who have jurisdiction over the placement of bus lines, control over traffic signals, and consideration of bus stop placements on municipal and state roads that our bus transit system relies on. The bill also provides funding for a free fare pilot. This idea is a natural continuation of the reduced fare program that Metro Transit launched in September and October of 2021. With volatility in gas prices and an acceleration of a changing climate, more Minnesotans can and should choose public transportation as their means of transportation. This transition will be aided by low or free fares, and we have some testifiers here today who will talk about why reduced fares are important to them. And why this study could pave the way for that, or could also tell the state that maybe we need to look at other ways to encourage low income or other folks looking for a ride to get around town. But these fare reductions do help with both the economic and climate change challenges that our state faced, as I said earlier. I would also note that we would not be leaders in this move, as more and more cities across the country are moving to free fares on transit. And this study could give us the data to determine if the Twin Cities should be amongst them. A critical factor in making Minnesotans' transit experience safe and comfortable is what the environment around them is like as they wait for the bus. For me personally, waiting for the bus is my least favorite part of using the bus. Not riding the bus, but waiting for it. And that's why this bill provides money for bus shelter improvements that will ensure that riders are not subjected to the elements or are standing in the dark as they wait for bus service in the late hours of night or at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, as we often have to do here in Minnesota in December. And as popular as our bus rapid transit system is, it would be impossible to roll out additional lines any faster than Metro Transit already is without continuing to plan. The bill provides an ongoing appropriation for new staff to plan for future bus rapid transit lines. And finally, the bill takes a significant step towards investing in clean, zero-emission electric buses for Metro Transit to deploy on corridors that are the most affected by air pollution, which would advance our climate goals and improve the health of communities like mine that live around those routes. And with that, Mr. Chair, I think we should go to questions. I will note that there is a fiscal note. It's a pretty fresh fiscal note. But there are a lot of really great assumptions in the fiscal note about what this would look like that would inform and it would inform what we would put in these blanks on our in our bill. The page that I thought was really useful, if you need a quick, just a quick look, would be starting at the bottom of page 9. Also, of course, there is the top line on the front page of your fiscal note. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I think we should go to questions. And actually, first I think we should go to testimony, and then we should go to questions.
I think the chair will make that decision.
Thanks so much. What we'll do is move straight to testimony, and I welcome the testifiers, and but ask that they stay at our two-minute testifying time that was communicated to you. So our first testifier is MJ Carpio from Move Minnesota.
Good evening to the House Transportation Committee members. My name is MJ Carpio, campaign manager for Move Minnesota. We're an organization advocating for expanded public transit across the state. I myself walk, I bike, I drive, I carpool, and I use our buses and trains a lot. As you may have heard, ridership is continuing to recover to pre-pandemic levels despite a transit operator shortage. And because there is a shortage, it's all the more important to implement transit signal priority system planning, which we already have the existing technology for, actually, and arterial bus rapid transit planning to reduce customer wait times and improve travel time. To further improve our system, alongside those items are transit shelter improvements, transition to zero emission buses, and transit fare elimination pilot program. And I'd love to discuss how each of these items contribute to a better system, but I'll touch on the fare elimination pilot program and the BRT planning since they're the most unintuitive. For a pilot study reference in Boston, they've found that eliminating fares can actually save money by saving time, because fare boxes operations and enforcements are clunky and time costly. That's pretty much true across the country. And they've also found that with bus rapid transit and all door boarding, there are significant fuel cost savings. So at Move Minnesota, we're very excited to see the data on the service and price elasticity effects with present and future customers alike. And on the outside, this bill might just seem like it's for improving bus, you know, local bus service. But at the heart of it, it is about the freedom of mobility by providing frequent, accessible, and reliable means for people to get around. It's about equity by providing more travel options when the annual cost of car ownership is at least 6 times greater than the cost of a transit pass. And as Representative Murphy correctly pointed out at this year's Transit Equity Day hearing, car ownership isn't the only thing affected by inflation. It's everything. So why not help with this? And it's about health, by helping to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation section, which remains to be the number one source of pollution in Minnesota. So this bill might be local, but it's a good model for the kind of problem solving that similar places in and outside of Minnesota, and even in and outside of the country, could look to. A huge thank you to Representative Jordan for championing the Local Bus and Transit Improvement Act last year and again this year. And thanks to Chair Hornstein for the chance to voice our support.
Thank you for testimony. Next, we have Jesse Case. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, we had a typo. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for our record.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2604. My name is Jesse Cook. In my transit advocacy, I tend to focus primarily on the high-level aspects of our transportation system, alignments of new routes, frequencies along certain corridors. Details like bus shelter improvements were, at one time, more or less secondary to me. But after my own experiences riding and relying on transit, I can fully appreciate the importance of these more minor elements and how they collectively shape our overall public transportation experience. Transit culture is a reflection of policy. Public perception is influenced by how well we take care of our infrastructure and the extent to which we prioritize our riders. Ultimately, people are comfortable with what's familiar. If transit isn't an everyday experience, we'll be hard put to encourage drivers to leave their cars for any fraction of their total journeys. I mean, this time of year especially, we're asking rather a lot for people to leave the comfort of their sedans with heated seats and toasted buns. The least we can do is offer an alternative with competitive travel time and one that gives the impression of cleanliness, comfort, and safety. This means bus shelters that are well upkept. It means having a dry place to sit while waiting, one that's not buried under half a foot of snow. And speaking to the practicality factor, it means transit signal priority for all rapid transit routes at a minimum. If we want to create a future in which regular transit is part of our culture, these details matter. People will remember the time they were ghosted by a half-hourly bus and left to stand in the cold with no shelter. They'll remember the time they were late to a meeting because a rapid transit route got stuck at a series of red lights. If we're to shift this perception to make transit seen not as a last resort, but as something legitimately desirable, we need to create better experiences. With the right policy and the right initiative, we'll soon have regular drivers telling their friends about how, when their car was in the shop, for instance, they could count on frequent bus service to go about their day-to-day activities, or how they shave time off their commute thanks to an ABRT route that doesn't get stuck in rush hour traffic. Meanwhile, those who rely on transit will find the stop safer, the trips faster, and our system much more accessible. Members of the committee, this is what transit equity looks like in the 21st century. Our state has been pushing that needle for decades. This bill is our crucial next step. I encourage your support for House File 2604. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Darwin Schaeferlein.
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Darwin Schaeferlein, and I'm a resident of Bloomington and a regular public transit rider. Like many of my generation, I do not own a car nor drive, instead using methods like public transportation to get around, including this very meeting today. Though I have enjoyed my experiences on public transit in Minnesota, many key limitations of the system are in dire need of fixing that HF 2604 would address. As a member of Metro Transit's Adopt a Stop program, I learned that only bus stops with shelters get regular maintenance, and it's typically up to volunteers and infrequent maintenance to take care of bus stops that just have benches or signs. There have been many times I have waited for buses with benches completely buried in snow, footpaths carved out to the curbs from where riders would step over to board the bus. I have waited at sign stops in rainstorms, hailstorms, and snowstorms alike. When we continue to double on in investing in and improving the transit system, one of the most important things we can do is improve local transportation access. By funding the Better Bus Stops program, we are going to ensure that our transit network will be accessible through all four seasons and provide a safe, comfortable experience for transit riders, as well as reduce waiting times by increased route frequency. One of the other major concerns that this bill will address is the need for speeding up the bus network. For the trip I took today by public transit from Bloomington to the Capitol here, it takes about the same time by public transit on some routes as it would to be to use a bicycle the entire way here. These slow speeds and traffic continue to hold our network back, and implementing more transit signal priority as allocated for in this bill would significantly improve the transit rider experience in the Twin Cities. I urge this committee to support House File 2604 and to continue to invest in improving transportation options for future generations. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we have Tim Marino. Tim here? Okay. I don't see Tim, so we'll move to discussion of the bill. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Jordan. You had mentioned about other states and others that are going to zero fares. Can you tell me what funding source do they use in order to subsidize and pay for that? Do you have any idea? You may not know. I'm just curious.
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, I don't have the specifics, but I do know that they've relied on a variety of sources, including in some places state funding. There might be also city funding. There might be other sources. But I do know that there have been pilot programs that have been used from government funds.
President Petersburg.
Thank you. And just as a comment on the bill, you know, I think the pilot, you know, certainly, Mr. Chair, you've got the money to be able to do that this time. But I do think I have concern about the expectation that someone that uses the light rail system and other systems – expect, I shouldn't say expect, that there needs to be figured out some way that we know that we have to pay for it, because the subsidy for whether it's a buses or light rail or whatever is currently paid by government entities and other things, and it comes from a variety of sources. Going to no fares increases that, and even if we were to be able to cut back some of the cost, those funds still have to be provided by somebody. And it is important for us to know that ridership and those that are interested in this transportation, we need to understand that it's not free. There is a cost. It's a cost by the rest of the taxpayers and others for it. And so I welcome you to try this as well, but I do have some concerns with it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Petersburg, I think those are good comments. I would point your attention to page 5 of the fiscal note, where it go in this the middle paragraph here. Has some pretty good assumptions about the fare elimination pilot program. The other point I would make, Mr. Chair, and I know I said light rail because that's how I get to work. I have to take the bus to the light rail to get to here because this is where I work. But you all knew that. But this is about buses. This is about transit and buses specifically. Light rail is great, but the backbone of our transit system is our buses. And so that's really what I'm interested in. And that's what this bill is really seeking to do. But the top four highest ridership routes are the D line, the 21, the C line, and the Route 18.
Great. Thank you. And Representative Fidella.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Kind of along the same lines, we're going to make ridership free. We're going to invest in nicer shelters and stops, which I agree with. But somebody's got to pay for it. And just have a concern with free rides right now. We're battling crime on some of the Metro Transit, and granted, it's more light rail. I just don't see an advantage on the crime side, especially if all of a sudden it's a free lift anywhere. I know one of the things some of the other legislation was doing was fare checks and things like that, which I agree with. So a lot of concerns. One, how are we going to pay for it? Is it creating $100 million deficit for Metro Transit? And then just the crime issues that go along with it.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, look, we're going to pay for buses the same way we pay for roads. Like, roads don't just come by the largesse of some company. We pay taxes, and then we use that to buy roads. That's how we're going to pay for this program. The other thing I would mention is that if you're concerned about crime on Metro Transit, you should want more people riding the bus and riding the train. That is one of the best ways to combat crime, is to just have more people around. That's been shown not only here, but in other places, that the more ridership you have, the better it is for crime statistics. So if you're concerned about crime, let's get more people on the buses. Let's get more people using our transit system.
Thank you. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if this is a question to you or to staff, but the appropriations for the zero emissions bus transit, looking at the fiscal note, that doesn't take into account any of IIJA funding that we could be awarded. I know there is a program, and we would just need a 20% match for those funding. So that fiscal note doesn't take that into account, any kind of federal money.
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cagle, I don't believe so. However, if someone asked me a question about IIJA and transportation, my first stop would be Representative Cagle. And so I would hope that I could come to you to talk about how we could access some of that funding for the bus shelters.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. There is IIJA money for zero emission buses, and it's our intention in the omnibus bill to use some of the money that we receive for IIJA to match federal money in order to access those buses. Am I correct on that, Representative Cagle? I believe so.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think, you know, this bill actually has appropriations for that, so that could probably be used as a match as well. But I know that Met Council did apply for the IIJA funding for zero emissions buses, and so any funding that we can get towards that match is going to make us much more competitive.
Thank you. Representative Jordan, there's no one else on the list, so if you have any closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always great to be here in front of the Transportation Committee. This is a really good bill. It's scalable, and this is this bill is like grounded in a pretty conservative idea, which is we have a transit system. We should take care of it. And I hope that this can find a place in your omnibus bill, and I'm happy to come back and talk to the Transportation Committee anytime.
Well, you're always welcome here. Thank you so much for bringing a good bill to us. And with that, members, House File
2604.
2604 is laid over. Sorry about that. Okay. I was too busy writing down your great quote that you just concluded with. We have a transit system, so we should take care of it. great. Our next bill on the agenda, I believe, is going to be Representative Cagle, House File 1947. Welcome. Do you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 1947 be laid over for possible inclusion, and I have a DE1 amendment.
Thank you very much. The bill is moved and laid over for possible inclusion. And would you all want to move your DE1 amendment?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
The DE1 is before us. Any quick... you don't have to go through the whole thing because that's the bill, but the bill you would like us to
sure.
consider.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This is a corridor planning for Fargo to or from Minneapolis, St. Paul, the Fargo-Moorhead. Really kind of looking and directing MnDOT to come up with an implementation plan on how we can either through passenger rail, commuter rail, or both have service from Minneapolis, St. Paul, to Fargo, but actually it would go Fargo all the way down to Chicago, so it's kind of the Empire Builder extension, maybe we call it. And so that is the bill, and that's the amendment. I'm sorry.
Thank you. We are incorporating the DE amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. We now have House File 1947 as amended before us. Thank you very much for the bill. Please present your bill, and we'll take some public testimony shortly after that.
I don't think I have much more to add to that on the DE, so I think we can move just right to testifiers.
Okay. Our first testifier is Commissioner Scott Schulte from Anoka County. Commissioner Schulte, it's nice to see you in person. We've been on a few Zoom calls.
It's good to be here, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee, Representative Cagle. I am Scott Schulte. I'm an Anoka County Commissioner. And prior to that, I was a Coon Rapids City Councilman for 14 years. So I've served in local government for a long time. And I'm here to talk about the portion of this delete all amendment where they talk about extending North Star to St. Cloud or beyond. My concern is we have studied that ad nauseum. I believe there are 9 studies out there that have studied how far North Star should go. The Met Council just finished a study, $187,000 study by a consultant who said that's one of the options, but it really doesn't make much sense. And that's every study comes up with North Star is a failed line. It's a line that is not working, and nobody has the answer to fix it. Everybody at the very end, when they can't figure out what else to say, they say, well, maybe if we extend it to St. Cloud, it'll fix it. Well, I know a lot of smart people, and the one thing they all agree on, if you're going to fail, fail early, fail cheap. We're missing that mark. We're gonna keep kicking this can down the road. We're gonna keep spending money on North Star. The subsidy per rider today is over $200 one way. That's $400 a day for a round trip ride. That's the subsidy. On its best day, North Star subsidy was $20 per rider, our buses are less than $4 a rider for buses. Before we put North Star on the rail, we ran a test line, North Star commuter coach. It ran from St. Cloud down to Minneapolis. That commuter coach ran the same number of miles the trains run. It ran on Highway 10 at an 85% fare box recovery, unheard of in transit. It was successful. We ran that for 2 years. That's the answer for this line. The answer is to make it flexible again, put it back on the roads, get it off the rail. Because it's not been successful, there's no way to make it successful. I thank you for hearing my testimony, and I wish you the best in making this decision.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for being here at the House. Okay, our next, I'm sorry, Jesse, I'm going to get it right this time, Jesse Cook. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Cook, once again, from Minneapolis. It's no exaggeration to say that Minnesota has one of the most ambitious rail plans in the entire country. For our state, this is a veritable point of pride. We are establishing ourselves as a leader not only in the Midwest, but for new transportation initiatives in the United States. Well over a decade ago, MnDOT posed the question, what are we trying to achieve for transportation in the next 50 years? The goals, as adopted by the Minnesota GO Vision, call for a transportation system that is flexible, adaptable, and sustainable. One that, to quote the GO Vision itself, enhances and supports Minnesota's role in a globally competitive economy. In this legislative session, I believe it's high time to cement our leadership position by establishing a network that, per the Minnesota State Rail Plan, connects Minnesota's primary assets, the people, natural resources, and businesses. By 2070, Minnesota's population is expected to increase by 850,000 people. Well before then, a comprehensive state rail network will be nothing short of a necessity. Train travel is on the rise, and make no mistake, it is the only way we can guarantee our transportation system can adapt to the influx of residents. Both population and economic growth, as noted by the state rail plan, will place additional strain on our highway system. No amount of road widenings or lane additions can keep pace with this growth. Not if our auto infrastructure isn't complemented by a robust mass transit network. Members of the committee, the future is rail. I urge you to support the Minnesota State Rail Plan. Support House File 1947 and make Minnesota a leader in regional transportation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Darwin Schaeferlein.
Thank you once again, chairs and members of the committee. At the beginning of March, my friends and I took Amtrak from the Twin
Cities. Can you state your name once again for the earlier.
Thank you once again, chairs and members of the committee. My name is Darwin Schaeferlein. I am the aforementioned Bloomington resident. At the beginning of March, my friends and I took Amtrak from the Twin Cities to Chicago. Despite our train being a once daily trip on a mundane, rainy March morning, the line was packed and wrapped around the halls of St. Paul Union Depot. Arriving at Chicago, the sheer scale of rail transportation I got to experience and travel on across the city made me realize just how badly such a network is needed in Minnesota. Nothing solidified that further when I took the Voigt bus back to the Twin Cities, which demonstrated that desperate need for rail transportation when we arrived at Madison and more people boarded the bus than at any other point of the whole trip. Most of these riders were in my generation, something that is consistent with trends in this country. Millennials, and even more so with Generation Z, are looking for transportation options. Compared to previous generations, we are owning cars less and getting our licenses less or later in life than 16 and 18 years old. Students in particular are frequent riders of public and intercity transit, and this bill would commit to Minnesota's long-term passenger rail plan to improve those transportation options for our generations. The Minnesota State Rail Plan highlights several key intercity corridors, of which MnDOT has requested to be analyzed through Amtrak's Corridor ID plan. The desperately needed Twin Cities-Milwaukee-Chicago train corridor is the start of what can be one of America's greatest passenger rail networks. One such amendment to HF 1947, which just passed, specifies studying and funding an extension of the TCMC train to Fargo-Moorhead, which is one of the requests that MnDOT made to Amtrak's Corridor ID program. By committing to the Minnesota State Rail Plan with HF 1947, Minnesota will be investing in our future generations to have high-quality transportation access to universities and colleges all over the state and in our neighboring states. We are not the only state to have put forward and committed to such a plan, as states like Tennessee and Ohio have also committed to such passenger rail expansions across their states, too. This is a bipartisan matter of improving the quality of reliable transportation to greater Minnesota without having to rely on intercity bus services or driving in the winters to be the only options. Regarding an extension to North Star, I also want to make a note that for as bad as the North Star ridership may seem, you're still taking tens of thousands of vehicles off the road every single year with this line. It was originally always supposed to go to St. Cloud, and it was politically held back. You cannot blame a toaster for not working if it is unplugged. You need to provide options that are flexible and have good schedules. And as demonstrated by not only the studies that Metro Transit has recently just released on the North Star extension, but my own childhood experience of living next to the North Star Fridley station and taking it to the Twins games proved to me people will use this line. And simply put, buses cannot handle the capacity that trains like the North Star can handle. An extension to St. Cloud is not only a no-brainer, but treating it as an intercity line as it was always intended to be is what should be the priority of the state of Minnesota. Simply put, either we could give it to Amtrak or keep it in Metro Transit's hands, but either way, it must be extended, and it should be a part of a much greater network that we are already building with corridors like Northern Lights Express, TCMC, and everything else in the state rail plan. I urge this committee to support House File 1947, and thank you for letting me testify again.
Thank you so much for your testimony. I don't know if Tim Marino made it in. Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Okay. Wait a second. I don't know where my document went on here. Oh, here we go. Well, thank you, Mr. Committee, members of thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Marino, and I apologize for not making my previous testimony attempt earlier. I come to you today to really advocate for expanding our rail access. This, as was mentioned by some of my friends earlier, this is a critical corridor. And to say something to the commissioner of Anoka County, he mentioned that North Star ridership is down, and that is true. But that is not just an express rail thing. This is for all of our express services. Our express bus going into downtown during peak hours and then coming back out, they're all down. If you look at the Orange Line that just opened up, our Highway BRT line going to Burnsville, it replaced the 535, which was the peak only service there. It's tripled its ridership. Now, if we give this line to Amtrak, which Biden just passed the bipartisan infrastructure bill with $66 billion given to Amtrak, and Northern Lights Express, which can be eligible for 80% of that funding, according to Met Council's numbers, we would just be on the hook for just to St. Cloud, $13 million. Now, that seems like a deal for getting all-day service. And I want people who are not drivers to be able to have access to the rest of the state and to be able to spend their money at local businesses and experience the great things that our state has to offer. I don't want people in the city to just stay in the city, just like I don't want people in the rural area to just have to stay in the rural area. I believe in connecting our state. I believe in connecting our citizens. Looking to see if there's anything else here. Other corridors that were discussed in the Minnesota State Rail Plan include Mankato, Eau Claire, Fargo, Albert Lea. These corridors make sense. We have freeways or expressways going to all of these places already, so there is a demand for travel to go there. And rail transit will take cars off the road, and it moves much more efficiently than cars, especially when it comes to the winter. I'm sure that anybody from MnDOT can attest that there are plenty of accidents, and especially in our rural areas, we often have to close our freeways due to blown over snow and stuff like that. And so I really encourage all of you to vote to pass this and to really add more resiliency to our transit system and our statewide transportation system and to connect our citizens.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, members, discussion to the bill? Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members.
The state could literally fund a Mercedes for every rider that rides this line. So how does this make sense for taxpayers, and why are we doubling down on the North Star?
Thank you. I think that was a comment, and maybe, well, if people have questions and comments, we'll, you can address those in your closing comments, Representative Cagle. Representative Hudela.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do I start? I feel like we could have spent our $18 billion just on all the trains we want in Minnesota right now, but I see the issue. We have problems right now. Southwest Light Rail, we need to get that done. We're trying to get crime under control. A 2010 study of this particular line going up through St. Cloud and Fargo estimated the subsidy at like $223 per rider with a 20% fare box recovery. And I'm not against trains. I think light rail has a lot of promise and a lot of future in the state. But we just need to get our existing trains tracking right now for crime and to get some minimal profitability to them, or at least reduction in the amount of subsidy that we're sticking into existing projects, because I can see projects like this in Duluth and Dan Patch and the zip line and all the other things we talked about really biting us a session or two from now, and we've got a lot of money and commitments out there, and we haven't solved some of the current issues that we have. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to represent Cagle, you know, wow, what a DE. This is quite an expansion from what you had before. But I'm guessing that because of the DE, we didn't get a fiscal note, and I'm sure that's still being worked on it. And I'm wondering if either you or maybe Mr. Lee, do you have any kind of ballpark figure on what you think this might cost at this point?
Representative Cagle.
Mr. Chair, I don't. I think we're waiting for the fiscal note. The original bill had $26 million in it, and so I'm not sure if it would be more or less than that. So I think the fiscal note will be helpful when it comes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Petersburg. And if I may just share a few comments then about the bill, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair. You know, one of the things that I looked at is that according to the department, the last update that I got from them, this is not in where it's in kind of a proposed rail study. It hasn't gone any more than just phase one, and it's not gotten into phase two, going all the way to the Fargo Moorhead area. And so it really hasn't gone very far with that. But just understanding that they're anticipating $4.5 to maybe $5 million for the planning stage, just to St. Cloud, that's going to be a little bit of a challenge to get farther than that. So I think there's an article in the paper from a few days ago about the North Star, in which right now there's somewhere between 300 and 310 people a day riding that North Star, and that currently the subsidy is about $150. Now I think a testifier said it's $200 a ride. But at 300 riders a day at $150 a day subsidy, that's $45,000 a day for subsidy. So a pretty decent brand new car you can buy for $45,000. So that's a brand new car every day, 365 days. That's a ton of money for the subsidy. And so I have real concerns about the ridership. And so, you know, we heard testifiers that have really made a great case for why they desire to ride the rail and why that would be helpful for them, and et cetera. But, and they even talked about IIJ money and how much money for just $13 million we could go to St. Cloud. The unfortunate part about that is that that's only the construction. It's not about the subsidy. And the subsidy of continuing and maintaining that is not there. So if they really want to look at some homework, look at how would you fund the subsidy and that cost, because currently that's quite a lot different. And if we are going to go this direction to where we think we want to pay for all of this and have rail service and so forth, then I think, Mr. Chair, the funding mechanisms have to be completely disbanded and changed from where it's being funded. Because the system that we have currently in place for funding transportation was designed back when the only responsibility of the Department of Transportation was to provide the roads. And then the infrastructure cost for that was built into it. Now that we're also expecting to perform and pay for the service itself, that model no longer works for funding. And so we have to figure out something else. I could tell you that I've got two real plans here. One from 2010, in which actually it was specified going to Moorhead. And that report itself from 2010 said the subsidy per ride from those days would be over $200 a rider. And again, if that's what we want to spend the money on, we certainly can do that. But that means that we have to take it from somebody else in order for that person to ride that train for that $220-some. So I have real concern with this because I think, whereas we may be leaning that way, I don't think we're there financially, and I don't think we're ready for us to embark on that kind of expense. And so, Mr. Chair, I think this is just a premature bill.
Thank you. There is one thing that you mentioned that I agree with you on, and I think Representative Houseman would agree with you on, around some restructuring of our statewide response to transit. So. I'll tell you offline a little about that later. We don't have time right now. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm sorry. There was one more testifier that I don't.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was you're phoning a friend.
No, sorry.
Okay. So what we're going to do here, members, we're going to hear the public testimony. We're going to take a comment from Representative Murphy. We're going to take a comment from Representative Tabke. We'll have closing comments from the author, and then we'll move on to our next bill. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Lydia Underdahl, BNSF Railway, and I wish I was phone a friend, but just have some testimony. I apologize for the lateness.
Sure.
So the bill as amended would look at the passenger line that runs on BNSF track and BNSF property. We do have some concerns with the amendment. We were able to talk with the author and MnDOT quickly before the hearing, but certainly have some more work to do. But I just wanted to let the committee know that we do have some concerns with the amount of time dedicated to the study and the ability to be thorough and get kind of the right numbers and the right information that would be needed from us to have an accurate report at the end. When we consider these projects, it's pretty complicated. We assess impacts of our capacity. This is one of our busiest lines in the state and in the region. And our main drivers of capacity are people and track. So we have a track record certainly of expansion in the state of Minnesota, particularly in the last 5 to 7 years, but we're still really confined to the infrastructure that we have in place in the state. So along those lines, like I said, we do have some concerns with the bill as amended, and I look forward to continuing to work with the author and the DOT and other interested parties.
Thank you for coming down and getting your concerns on the record here and sharing those with us in person. So we'll move to Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to make a couple comments. I live up by that area. I just see this as being a really bad investment. I don't see how this is going to work. For one thing, Fargo people, people are going to Fargo, not coming from Fargo. And I don't think they're going to take that trip down there for any work. And it's still a long ways, and it's pretty fast just on the interstate. I just don't see it adding up. And for that cost, you know, testifier Jesse was just really excited and prideful of what this would mean to us. But I hope they realize who's going to have to pay for it down the road. So I'm concerned about that. The $400 round trip just doesn't make sense to me. The 2010 study estimated a 20% fare box recovery. So it's going to be something that's going to be a long-term hole to pay for us. In 2019, we had 2,700 riders on that trip to St. Cloud. Now we have about 300 per day from the trip to St. Cloud. That's what it said in one of the reports I read. Maybe I have a different number, but I just see it being a really bad investment. I don't see us coming out of this one very good. I don't think it's going to be good for the people along that route. It gets pretty rural when you get past St. Cloud, for one thing. I just don't see them coming this way. So I think it's a really poor investment.
Thank you for your comments. Representative Tabke and then Representative Cagle will conclude.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. With Chair Nelson not in the committee today, I just need to make sure to make Chair Nelson's statements that roads are subsidized every single day, and we need to make sure that we are balancing roads being subsidized every single day, but with cars, that we also make sure that we are investing in transit and transit ridership, because every person that's riding transit is somebody who is out of a car and making more room for commerce and other folks that are other things are happening on every day. So just need to, as we're talking about these things, remember always that roads are also very subsidized.
Thank you, Mr. Tapke. Chair Cagle, your closing remarks, and if you want to respond to any comments, conclude, and we'll lay your bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. So just kind of going through the testimony, you know, we're really looking to see if commuter rail is the right answer for this line. I think as legislators, we're sent here to actually offer solutions to problems, and so that's what I'm doing is bringing a solution forward to something that people have been complaining about for a really, really, really long time. And, you know, we want to make sure that this part of the DE amendment itself, it says determine cost estimates for full implementation, including any capital improvements, operations, rolling stock, and equipment. So I think that gives us a good idea of what we're facing. And the folks, you know, that are going to be paying for it in the future are the ones that came here and testified for the fact that they want it. You know, if Representative Petersburg would like to amend my bill to give everybody in Minnesota a car, I'd be totally for that too. But you know, but that's the thing. Not everybody in Minnesota wants a car, and people going from Minneapolis do want to go to Fargo to maybe see the Gophers play the whatever that team is called now, and North Dakota.
We get so much mail from North Dakota.
You know, see, and so you know, this is about offering options and looking for solutions, and so this is just another way for us to examine and find a solution for this problem, and not just admire it from afar, but actually get an implementation plan and figure out how to get our way out of. You know, get our way moving forward. So with that, I will just thank you guys for your time. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1947 be laid over for possible inclusion.
House File 1947 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. Thank you, Representative Cagle. Our last bill this evening is House File 2361. And Representative Ream has been waiting very patiently. And I will move that House File 2361 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. And before Representative Ream presents House File 20, well, there is an amendment. There is an amendment, an A1 amendment, which is being passed out now. And members, I am the guilty party here, so I'm going to move the A1, and then we'll proceed with the bill as amended. So the A1 is okay. Yeah, the author's comfortable with me just presenting this first. So, members, we've talked a lot about the Corridors of Commerce program over the years. I'd like to move the A1, by the way. This is a bill to really create a Corridors of Commerce-like program for safety. We have so many roads and even bridges, but, you know, thinking about a particular bridge on I-94 that we want to have maybe a pedestrian component too. I talked with the I-94 coalition when I was visiting them, and that was something that they were interested in. So we have an intersection safety and mobility program, and again, we're going to hear about safety in this bill, particularly pedestrian safety, crash reduction. So I think that having a real specific a new initiative for crash reduction and safety specifically to complement the Corridors of Commerce program is needed. So I wanted to just make sure this idea was before the committee as we consider a broader traffic safety initiative. So that's the A1 amendment, and would be happy to have your support, at least to get this in the bill that
the author and the chair would like it considered in. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. So now we have House File 2361 as amended before us. Representative Ream.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you've been following the news at all, you may have heard that traffic fatalities are on the rise, despite many of our efforts. The MnDOT website states that the four leading causes of traffic fatalities are 1, impaired driving, 2, distracted driving, 3, lack of seatbelt use, and 4, speed. While serving on the Chanhassen City Council, I, you know, had a lot of discussions about roads, and we had some stories of crashes in the area. In particular, we had an intersection on Highway 7 in Eureka that was that had a number of terrible crashes, fatalities. And the leaders in our area got together and tried to come up with a plan. And it took months, but MnDOT did come out, and they came to us and gave us their study, and they looked into the future about what they could do. But quite honestly, it wasn't addressing the urgent needs of this intersection. And so talking with Chair Hornstein, you know, hearing about this plan to create a traffic safety council, you know, I think it's a great idea. And it's a fairly long bill. I'll briefly go through the summary that I have, and then I'm going to call upon some testifiers to speak. We also have the mayor of Shorewood here who will talk about that terrible intersection. And then we can also, if you could look at the letters, too, from a number of supporters, that would be great. But HF 2361, Safe Roads Act, proposes policy changes and funding for traffic safety measures that support the next iteration of the Toward Zero Deaths program. TZD is a 20-year-old partnership of state, county, and city agencies and organizations focused on reducing fatalities and injuries on Minnesota's roadways. TZD has recently completed a strategic review of its mission and reach. The Safe Roads Act supports the recommendation of the TZD review and moves us toward TZD 2.0. Many of the appropriations are also designed to match up with emphasis areas of federal funding provided under the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. So very briefly, if you look at Section 1, it talks about establishing an advisory council on traffic safety, which is linked to an annual traffic safety report in Section 10, and an appropriation Article 2, Section 1, for $4 million each fiscal year, which will serve as a state match for federal TZD funding. And then, excuse me, if you move to Section 4 and 5, safe road zones allows local authority to be defined in updated language, petition for a safe road zone designation for a dangerous section of roadway, and triggers state agency obligations to help resolve the issues. So this would have helped, you know, something like this would help in our situation on Highway 7. This is tied to an appropriation of $2.75 million in Article 2, Section 2. And with this, local elected law enforcement and transportation management authorities who know the dangerous roads and intersections would have that in their jurisdiction. Safe road zones gives this group a process to seek recognition and begin working on dangerous roads. Section 8 and 9 addresses the hands-free law, provides a technical fix to an issue with holding the phone in one or both hands, but claiming to not be using it. And then Section 12 and 13, the safety enforcement pilot program, I think we're making modifications on that. And then I guess I would like to move quickly to our testifiers who can also speak to this. And first up, I don't know if you...
Yeah, we have Director Hansen from the Office of Traffic Safety. And again, I'd ask our testifiers to keep within the time limit that was specified. Thank you, Representative Ream, and welcome, Mr. Hansen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Mike Hansen, and I have the privilege of serving as the director for the Department of Public Safety's Office of Traffic Safety. I'd like to thank Representative Ream and Chair Hornstein for bringing the bill forward. I will keep my testimony very short in order to answer questions and leave enough time for other testifiers. The bill that you have before you has many aspects of it that will all improve traffic safety across the entire state of Minnesota. There are so many aspects here that will allow us to move into a proactive approach to solving tough traffic safety issues, as Representative Ream described in her opening description to you. The foundation for that is the Traffic Safety Advisory Council. This will bring the Towards Zero Deaths program really up to speed. TZD is 20 years old this year. It's been a very successful partnership between DPS, MnDOT, and the Department of Health. But it's been held together really rather informally, and that has worked during our initial phases. But it's to the point now where we need to bring some structure, some responsibility, some accountability, and some reportability to that. And that's exactly what the Advisory Council will do. And just as importantly is it brings resources to the table that we can implement and use at the local level right now. And when we look at all of the proposals in general, a good portion of that is going to be available to local jurisdictions to solve local problems. We know traffic safety issues are best solved at the local level, working with the experts at MnDOT, the Department of Health, the Department of Public Safety, and that's exactly what this will do. This is good life-saving legislation. It will make a tremendous difference on our roads, and I would ask that you support it. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Director Hansen. So we're going to take two more testifiers, and then we'll have committee discussion. Jennifer Labadie, the mayor, is here with us. Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jennifer Labadie. I'm the mayor of the city of Shorewood. Thank you for providing me with the opportunity to speak to you today in support of Representative Ream's bill, which would, amongst other things, provide the establishment of an advisory council on traffic safety. In June of 2021, a fatal collision occurred at a Shorewood intersection referenced earlier by Representative Ream, and this intersection was with Highway 7. After the death of this 20-year-old motorcyclist who collided with a 16-year-old Shorewood resident, there was a large public outcry from MnDOT to make Highway 7 safer. MnDOT began a traffic safety audit and created an interactive map covering 30 miles of Highway 7 where people could document their safety concerns. Over 1,000 people took time to log onto the map and log their concerns about the safety of Shorewood's intersections with Highway 7. And Shorewood has a population of 7,800 people. There have been 41 fatalities or serious injuries along the 30-mile stretch of Highway 7 since 2016. Last October, MnDOT presented the results of their traffic safety audit. MnDOT does not plan to make any major safety improvements to Shorewood's intersections with Highway 7 for over a decade. Minnesota State Senator Kelly Morrison drafted a bill, SF2333, seeking funds for a needed Highway 7 corridor study. The bill is co-sponsored by Minnesota House Reps Patty Acomb and Andrew Myers, HF2489. Minnesota Senator Kelly Morrison also drafted a second bill, SF2332, seeking funds from the creation of a corridor coalition. The bill is co-sponsored by House Reps Patty Acomb and Andrew Myers, HF2490. Representative Ream's bill and the establishment of an advisory council would positively impact Shorewood and other similarly sized cities. This would provide cities with a louder, stronger voice when attempting to negotiate with MnDOT or county agencies. It would allow smaller cities like Shorewood to benefit from more immediate improvements that hopefully don't take a decade or more of public outcry to achieve. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mayor Labadie. I want to especially highlight, you know, the work that's been done on Highway 7, but there are Highway 7s all over the state, as you're describing. Probably each one of us in the districts we represent can think of an intersection or a road that has had tragedies like the one you described. And so we really want to make sure that through this bill, as amended, we have a real strong and focused mechanism to make sure that what you're describing never happens again. So thank you for sharing that story and for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
Our final testifier on this bill is Reed Lytle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Reed Leedley, and I'm with Safety
Proceed.
Reed Leedley with Safety Signs and representing Citizens for Work Zone Safety. So I think we can probably only agree the only thing worse than potholes is construction. And my company and our coworkers put out the orange stuff during construction, the signs, the cones, the barrels, and of course when that happens and when traffic is congested, everyone's going real slow. But when traffic isn't congested, people are driving at the speeds that they choose to. And we know that people are speeding up to 100 and 110 miles an hour through the work zones right next to our workers out doing the traffic. And it's not just the traffic control folks, it's the men and women that are building the bridges and paving the roads, and there's tens of thousands of them on these projects. In addition to the workers, it is the traveling public. And so the traveling public is crashing, and both workers and the traveling public, there's serious injuries and fatalities. So this bill is going to help us implement work zone safety strategies and speed mitigation strategies, and I plea with you to support this to get it across the finish line. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Laidley. Members, that concludes our public testimony, and now we can have, now we have committee discussion, and Representative Cagle is first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to highlight the Work Zone Safety Program. I don't know, what was it, a couple years ago, we got to go stand on the Highway 94, Interstate 94 project, down on the road next to the road construction. And that's scary. That's really scary. So I can't imagine doing that every day. And so thank you very much for including that in this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Petersburg and then Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to double check. Did you say you were just laying this over?
Yes.
Does it, and I'm sorry I didn't really catch this before, but with some of the other data privacy and other stuff, doesn't it need to stop anywhere else? Have you talked to the chair of judiciary or anything? Well, in regards to that or not? I don't know. I'm just asking you.
I think Mr. Austin has some perspective on that. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Austin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Safety Council. Representative Petersburg, excellent question. There's actually an author's amendment that's in the works, and so some changes to this language. And so within that structure, as this is laid over, we'd like to work with the author and with the chair to delete section 12 of the bill as introduced, which is the pilot program study, and retain section 13, which is a legislative report by the task force that is designed to answer the hard questions around automated enforcement, including the data privacy question that you raise. So I think that's the path forward on this provision. And just for the record, Mr. Chair, that same discussion about language changes deletes sections 2, 3, 6, and 7 as introduced, which are all the bike and active transportation sections, which are covered elsewhere. I believe Representative Elkins has covered those in other bills along the way.
Okay, that was a very helpful question, Representative Petersburg, and that's a very helpful response. Yeah. So maybe, thanks for saying that on the record. So, Mr. Austin, if you could just review then, we're laying this bill over, and so this right. gives the committee some direction in terms of what this final bill would look like. Could you just repeat the sections that you would like Correct. To maintain in the bill?
Maintaining the bill, so section one, the advisory council. Director Hansen described that. Sections 4 and 5 as introduced, the safe road zones, which was described very nicely by the mayor. Sections 8 and 9, which are corrections to the hands-free bill. Section 11, which is the traffic safety violations disposition analysis. This is a study by the university on what happens to all the tickets for speeding, seat belts, impairment, distraction from roadside to literally courtside. Sections 12 and 13 we talked about modifying. And then the appropriations essentially stay as they are, with the exception of the appropriation that is for the pilot project. The sections 12 and 13 have a small appropriation for them, but the rest of the appropriations for enhanced traffic safety enforcement, which provides funding to local law enforcement for the traffic safety portions of officer training, the funding for rural risk high roads. This is funding to DPS and to MnDOT to work specifically on roads in the rural areas where there's high speeds and dangerous intersections. That's section, Article 2, Section 5. You may ask why. 3 out of 4 deaths occur in greater Minnesota on Minnesota roads. Yes,
just for clarification.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think earlier you said something about that you're working on an amendment to delete Section 12 and
correct.
Keep 13, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, because just now I thought you said it would, 12 and 13 were just modified.
Sorry.
So.
Yes, correct. Delete Section 12, change the dates on Section 13 for a report right. to come back to the legislature on January 3rd of 2024. And then in the appropriations section, there's also some funding for improving the safe rides, the sober cab programs in the state, as well as mitigating some risks in the work zones that was described by Mr. Lively.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg, again, thank you for the question, and you now have a comment.
I have two other quick questions. I just want to make sure on hands-free, which I supported, and I worked with the chair in getting it passed. I just want to make sure that the language, and I think I talked to you about it too, if am I breaking the law if I take my phone out of my pocket and hand it to my wife?
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg.
Having a flashback to 2019.
Absolutely. We've discussed that question with some of the county attorneys. It's an excellent question. There is no way to describe that action in law reasonably, and it's essentially left at the discretion of the enforcing officer, much like the one-touch test is in the existing law as well.
I'll just have her reach across and get it from. No, I won't. The other question, Mr. Chair, is then again, this has a fair amount of blank appropriations. Mm-hmm. Do you have any guesstimate on what it might cost at all? Does anybody?
Mr. Hansen, much of this is in the governor's recs, and if you maybe could answer that, I think that would be helpful.
Another testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, again, I don't have the fiscal note details right in front of me, but if I'm remembering correctly, we're looking at about a $7 to $8 million note when all of these programs and projects would be included. Some of it is one time, but some of it does carry forward.
Okay. That's just we'll be looking forward to that, Mr. Speaker.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, excuse me.
Thank you. Okay. Did you have any further questions?
That's it for
okay.
Now.
Representative Sensenmira.
No, I got my question answered.
Oh, good. Okay. Any other discussion, members? Okay. Representative Reem, any comments on 2361 as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, I'm going to just say that getting into our car every day is one of the most dangerous things we do on a regular basis. And I'm hopeful that by creating a council like this and working on some of the sections here, I know there's ongoing discussion on how we're going to be implementing things, but I really have faith that if we can work together, we can make our roads a lot safer. And I think the urgency is there. I don't know if everyone feels it, but certainly those of us who see these accidents, the crashes in our areas, realize that, you know, we need to move a lot faster. I know one of the goals, too, is to have, you know, a report given every year. We talked about the report to be given on January 3rd, 2024. And we talked about having a list of the top 10 worst intersections or the worst crash sites. And, you know, one by one, making those safer. And I think that's a good start to mitigating how dangerous our roads are. So I appreciate the time and your consideration, and I look forward to working with you more on this bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Ream for carrying this, and it's very, very important bill. And again, thank you for all of the work you did on this. And so with that, members, House File 2361 as amended is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation bill. Okay, members, so our last hearing of the regular season is tomorrow, and we're back at our usual hearing room in 120 at the Capitol at 8:30, and look forward to a good hearing, and thank you very much. Remember, Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I think I heard some rumors that next week could be a little bit different. Do you have plans for that to be any different time, or are we still meeting regular times?
At this time, we are. It is a little bit different, so I'm glad that you announced. So we will meet normally our normal time on Tuesday, 8:30 and 1:20. And then Thursday will be our normal time, also 8:30 and 1:20. Friday, though, we will be meeting in our normal time at the Capitol in 1:20, but we're going to go till noon on Friday because that's the day that we do amendments and markup, and so we've set aside some additional time for Friday.
I thought I had heard that the bill may not be ready for us on Tuesday. That's all I was inquiring.
Oh, well, at this point, I'm sorry. Oh, you are correct. Sorry about that.
little birdie told me.
Okay. So. Oh, okay. Got it. Thursday is a double one. Friday is a double one. That's why we're.
But still meeting Tuesday, or do we have
no Tuesday? Off? Sorry about that.
Everybody got Tuesday off. Just because I pushed it. No.
Okay, sorry about that.
Okay, thank you.
Got it now. Okay, Representative Spencer Muir.
No, not my question answered.
Okay. Is everyone clear? I've had trouble all day with dates. Okay, by the way, Ms. Swaggart will send an email out. So you guys are off until Thursday. And Representative Fogelman likes that. Okay, I
except for tomorrow.
That's right.
Mr. Chair.
In terms of next week. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
You guys, I think you know when we're meeting, right?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Who's on first?
With that, we're adjourned.